Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. This Monday, the 31st of July. I'm Isaac Mgab, your host.
And with your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Coming up on the program, provisional results from the weekend legislative elections in Senegal show the ruling coalition of President Macky Sall heading for a landslide victory, bolstering his prospects of re-election in 2019. But many voters didn't have a chance to cast their ballots.
There are a lot of anomalies when you listen to the radio. There are so many people who want to vote, but who can't right now.
And former President Abdoulaye Wade has returned from France to lead his party in the opposition. And at 91 years old, there are speculations that Wade is contesting the next presidential election. I have all of your responses shortly.
That's right indeed, Abu, and I can't wait to listen to some of them. The battle for the presidency in Kenya has taken an ugly twist after the ruling party and the opposition accused each other of wanting to ruin the elections and tamper with the results as well.
We are looking at an environment that is very tense, that can move from the calm situation we are currently enjoying to a violent one.
All that coming up in the next 15 minutes, but first, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered U.S. diplomatic missions in Russia to reduce staff by 755 people. The move came in response to a new set of U.S. sanctions against Moscow that was passed by the U.S. Congress. The bill also strips U.S. President Donald Trump of the authority to end sanctions against Moscow on his own. In addition to the embassy in Moscow, the United States has three other consulates in Russia. At least 10 people have been killed in Venezuela as the opposition boycotted an election that could place near-total power in the hands of President Nicolas Maduro. The killings include the death of the regional secretary for the youth opposition party Democratic Action, Ricardo Campos, who was shot dead during a protest against the election. In the capital Caracas, a bomb exploded and injured 7 police officers. President Maduro, meanwhile, hailed the vote as the biggest ever vote for the revolution, pledging it will end the country's debilitating political and economic crises. You're listening to DW News. The UK High Court in London has found that former Prime Minister Tony Blair should not be prosecuted under English law for his role in the 2003 Iraq War. The decision comes after a former Iraqi general had tried to put Blair on trial for having committed a crime of aggression, a non-existent charge in English law. The move effectively blocks any future attempts to take legal action against the former Prime Minister on the basis of accusing him of crimes of aggression. Last year, a major inquiry had concluded that Blair had led Britain into war with Iraq on the basis of flawed intelligence and without exhausting all diplomatic solutions available. An important Kenyan election official has been found tortured and killed, the country's electoral commission announced. Christopher Msando had been reported missing a few days ago and was found murdered with injuries to the neck and head. He had been in charge of managing information technology systems at the Electoral Commission. Msando's body was discovered one day after an intruder had invaded the home of Deputy President William Ruto. Kenyan security expert George Musamali told DW that further violence might be in store ahead of the elections.
I think we need to improve on the security of all the commissioners, because already you've seen what has happened. We need to work on the security of key politicians in this country. It's not any other day that somebody will attempt to attack the president of a deputy president, a sitting deputy president, with all the security arrangements in place. So it means we are still have grey areas that we need to look into.
Kenyan elections have turned severely violent in the past, most notably after the 2007 presidential vote when more than 1,000 people were killed in clashes. And for more news and information, please go to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And hosting your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
We begin the program in Senegal, where the ruling coalition of President Macky Sall is heading for a landslide victory in a legislative election that could bolster his prospects for re-election come the year 2019. That's according to provisional results. Sall's main threat to increasing his power in parliament was posed by ex-leader Abdoulaye Wade, who, at the age of 91, was aiming to drum up support for his own list of candidates and his son Karim, who's not on the ballot but has ambitions for the presidency. Aida Grovestins in Senegal has more.
The first results indicate the coalition of President Macky Sall won 48%. The coalition of the mayor of Dakar, Khalifa Sall, garnered 26% and is leading in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Former President Abdoulaye Wade's coalition got 20% of the votes. The Minister for Interior Affairs, Abdoulaye Daouda Diallo, says only 70% of the electorate got their voting card, but the opposition has expressed its discontent. They accuse authorities of delivering the new biometric identity / voting cards in a selective way to help Macky Sall's coalition. Only a couple of days ago, the authorities allowed passports or identity cards as a valid voting card as well.
Bon, malheureusement,
there are a lot of anomalies when you listen to the radio. There are so many people who want to vote, but who can't right now.
These elections are very complicated. There are, for example, young people who just reached the age to vote or who never had an identity card before and who did not get their voting card. They cannot vote now because they do not have another identity card.
People had to wait for hours for the polling stations to open. Let's hear from Babacar Camara, a representative at the polling station in Stadion Oumar Diop.
Since 9 this morning, we haven't received the voting lists nor the voting ballots. We called the person concerned and he told us to be patient. Up until now, we haven't heard anything.
Djilima Camara was one of many who had to wait for hours before she could vote.
We are at a place called CISAP Liberté. Since this morning, people are here to vote, but the voting material isn't here yet.
There are many local observers who tweet their observations and the results from different polling stations. Ismaïla Dieng is a well-known blogger who tweets about the elections.
Today, I went to different polling stations to observe how it goes, if people can vote normally, if everything goes well. Everywhere in Senegal, the election day has badly started. The voting started late in many centers because the voting bulletins weren't there. A lot of Senegalese didn't get their voting card and therefore couldn't vote.
There's a lot at stake. These parliamentary elections are seen as the first round for the 2019 presidential elections. Former President Abdoulaye Wade is making a return to the political scene after 2 years and aims to drum up support for his own list of candidates. But for President Sall, a parliamentary majority would be a boost as he eyes a second term next year.
Aida Grovestins in Dakar. Abu, I can see you warming up for some reactions.
Yes, and as Aida was reporting there, Abdoulaye Wade is back to bolster support for his political party. People say he actually intends to stand for the next election. We have this response from Didace in Rwanda who said, it's very surprising, look how old he is, but he still needs to accumulate other money. His son must be punished if he is found guilty.
Odemi from Nigeria says, the 91-year-old contender, what don't we see in Africa? Does it mean he's so friendless he can't find just one to help out and come to think of it? Must the son not pay for his crimes?
Percy from Cameroon said, African politics, it's arrant nonsense. A man at 91 years old still thinks of ruling over 15 million people. Africa can't progress with this traditional, corrupt and useless system.
And our usual commentator, Ewaza Godwin, says, I wonder if Senegal's constitution would permit Abdoulaye Wade to contest again, or I'm thinking Mr. Wade would help a candidate of his choice. Anyway, a tit-for-tat game between Russia and the US rages on after President Vladimir Putin expelled at least 755 diplomats from Russia. The move is in retaliation for new sanctions passed by US Congress last week. The bill, which also put sanctions against Iran and North Korea, received overwhelming support in Congress and was being sent to President Donald Trump for final approval. DW's Sarah Hammond talked to our correspondent in Moscow, Nicholas Connolly. Take a listen.
President Putin has, you know, put these measures into effect even before Donald Trump could sign these congressional anti-Russian sanctions into law. So there's obviously not much hope left here in Moscow that Trump can stop or delay these measures. And more broadly, I think there's a disappointment here that Trump has not been able to deliver in terms of bringing Russian-U.S. relations back from that low point they were at under Obama. So there's now, you know, a willingness to really escalate this. In terms of the workings of the embassy, I don't think that will become clear for some time. Most of what they do is behind closed doors. There is the suggestion that Russian nationals may have to wait longer for U.S. visas in the future. And I think it's important here to remember that lots of the people affected here aren't, strictly speaking, U.S. diplomats. These are Russian nationals who work as support staff in the embassy, as cooks, as administrative staff, as drivers. So, you know, a real large number of people here and a real reduction in the scale of the U.S. diplomatic presence.
All right. Should Washington, Nick, be bracing for further measures from Moscow?
Well, we've been having some sort of mixed signals on that. We heard just recently in the last few hours from a Kremlin spokesman saying that Russia would be willing to go further should the U.S. react. Having said that, President Putin yesterday saying that for now this was it. There wouldn't be any more unless the U.S. went further. The problem is there isn't any really obvious step. Economic sanctions would be the normal thing to do, but given that the U.S.-Russian trade relationship is so insignificant, it's only about a tenth of the trade that Russia does with the EU, for instance, they wouldn't really hurt. There's been suggestions perhaps that we might see greater confrontation in the UN Security Council, Russia using its veto over North Korea and Syria and US attempts to move on there. In space, the US is very dependent on Russian technology to get its astronauts to the space station. But for now, there's no really obvious next step. So that makes this all a bit of a difficult path going ahead.
Nicholas Connolly, DW's correspondent in Moscow. Now, the battle for the presidency in Kenya has taken an ugly twist after President Uhuru Kenyatta accused the main opposition leader, Raila Odinga, of wanting to sabotage the August 8th election. The opposition coalition hit back and accused the president and his party of wanting to use state security agencies to rig the elections. But Uhuru Kenyatta has been quoted by local newspapers saying that he will concede defeat if he loses fairly. Catherine Omwando has more.
One of Kenya's long-term election observer group, ELOG, has been monitoring the election process. While there has not been any notable election-related violence, observers like Eustace Kinyua say the situation is concerning, especially if leaders continue to trade accusations.
We are looking at an environment that is very tense, that can easily be, can move from the calm situation we are currently enjoying to a violent one, or if the situation is managed early enough, we might avert the possibility of that violence.
Last week, the Kenya police issued a statement terming all informal settlements as possible violence hotspots in this election period. These ethnic divides mean different things to different people.
Kibera is Kenya's largest informal settlement with a population of 200,000 people. The different areas are dominated by different ethnic groups. Now these divides become more evident during elections.
Jane Nyaboke, a survivor of the 2007 post-election violence, says it means a safe haven for her and her five children. For Jane, rumors of the government planning to use security agencies during this election is worrying.
Here I feel safe. It's like I'm living with my brother or my sister. What I'm afraid of is the police. During the 2007 election, the day my husband was killed, men in uniform came into my house and assaulted me. I don't trust the police.
The Kenya police spokesman says at least 180,000 police officers will be deployed during the elections. He assures the officers have been trained to handle elections and election-related incidences, adding that peace is dependent on the Electoral Commission.
It depends on how IEBC portrays themselves to the public. Are they portraying themselves to carry out a free and fair election? It's not our duty, as we only protect the ballot papers and the stations, period.
That report was by Catherine Omwando in Kenya.
And Isaac, as usual, Kenya, there's lots of responses. Razak Mumuni said politics in Africa has never been about service to the people, but rather an opportunity for the corrupt elite to amass wealth at the expense of the masses.
And Chris Kabaza from Zambia says, so sad, killing isn't the solution.
Let me give you a quick one from Ojanjo Ubia from South Sudan. He says, it's unfortunate to hear such information.
And Samuel Kwesi from Ghana says, are some Kenyans that disruptive? No one should hold onto power forever. Anyway, keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we will always read them right here on air whenever we can. And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, hepatitis B disease on the rise in Ghana.
It was my sister who is sick when we brought in at teaching hospital. And they needed blood to donate. Then when I went to the laboratory to donate the blood, that they told me that I have hepatitis.
And our question for your opinion today is, should political parties allow presidential candidates contest an election after failing in the first bid? Leave us your responses on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We will always get back to them.
That's right, indeed. I'm waiting for those comments, Abu, you know, to listen to what people are saying, you know.
Definitely
people wanting to stay in power, to cling on power, even if they have lost in the first round of election, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but first, the fourth edition of the Africa Culture Festival ended here in Bonn with a focus on the current migration trends and refugee crisis. Participants at the various workshops that were part of the festival called for more tolerance for asylum seekers and refugees from war torn countries in some regions of Africa and the Middle East so they can be integrated into mainstream society and begin a new life. The festival was also an opportunity for people of different backgrounds to come together and interact with their German hosts. Zipporah Nyambura has more.
African music and dance were the main highlights of this year's Africa Orient Cultural Festival that focused on showcasing the rich African culture and values that define the true African spirit. Like these sounds of the Ngoma band from Tanzania that tell how love and tolerance for one another bonds society together. Participants who had come from different parts of Germany were delighted to take part in the festival, were full of praises for the organizers as the event gave them an opportunity to showcase their works. Daniel Adeda from Ghana and a graduate of textile engineering was at the festival to show his pieces of art that he makes from fat material.
I decided to come also to display my artworks. A lot of people are very surprised about how I came about this idea and how I was able to present pictures on the scene with the fat material because it's not common. So artists can also get some ideas from here. So far, so good. I am the only one here presenting faith on the surface. The whole of Germany, I'm the only one doing it.
Vincent Onyango from Kenya, who calls himself the festival man because year in, year out, he's been to every festival in Germany, was there to showcase Kenya's traditional fabrics. From Maasai traditional wear to ornaments and sandals made of local materials back home.
The impression of the market is quite positive, and you know, I was even here last year. We've been very lucky, you know, the whole week it had been raining, and they always say when the Africans are in town, the sun is always shining, and the people are very receptive. My products are 99.9% Kenyan, with a few things from Tanzania, you know, we're neighbors. So you can see I have got kikois, I've got calabashes, I've got soapstones, I've got pen holders, I've got letter openers.
One of the organizers, Harry Racha, said that this year's festival was well attended to, just like the previous one, and it has come at a time when Europe is grappling with the migrants and refugee crisis. He calls for more dialogue among the people to discuss the issues affecting refugees.
I think it is very important when you talk about migration and difficult teams like that, that you have many different people sitting together, really have an exchange and a discussion. It is It is a bit of a danger that you just take somebody who talks in the same sense that you are thinking of yourself. But then you don't have a great progress. You need to discuss and to persuade people who have another point of view, that you have a mixture of different meanings.
It was not only arts and crafts, but also African dishes were in plenty, and so were the drinks. At another Kenyan stall that served cocktails, it was merrymaking for those who visited it to quench their thirst, like Munya Kapuka, who told me about his impression of the whole festival.
We're very happy to join this African festival here. The weather is nice. As the background music is saying, Kamatachini, Kamatiachini, we start from the bottom. Start carrying and catching it from the bottom. The language of our forefathers, Kiswahili. Our festival is really nice. Location is a bit bigger. People are more spread. Nice food, nice atmosphere. From the percentage, it's even actually more people who are actually not from Africa representing. It's nice to see that they're all integrated in our culture.
It's a Monday, and I think you're still a bit grumpy from the weekend.
Yeah, sure, indeed.
You're live in the middle of this event.
Yeah, it's just because of that report you've just had, you know. Africa Link was well represented.
I kind of heard you in that report as well.
Of course. My colleague Zippy just helped you not read it. And remember, Abo, you were there as well, you know. Our colleagues.
My favorite was the Senegalese food.
Exactly. And our colleagues, you know, our own Crispin Makide was also there on Friday. And so was Wanjiko Maura was also there on Saturday. And even Zippy, Zippora Nyambura, was also there. So we love
nice
the place.
To experience
it was
things.
Good.
It
I love the interaction.
It gives you a feeling of back home.
I loved the food. I like the people interacting, and it was really fun. I can't look forward for the next one come next year, Abu. How about you?
Definitely looking forward to it.
Health Check. For Health Check this week, we head to the town of Tamale in northern Ghana, where there are deep misconceptions surrounding hepatitis B disease. They believe that the disease is contracted through the sharing of local brew with the same calabash or drinking mug. Sharing from the same mug in this part of Ghana is seen as a symbol of unity. But in a country where hundreds of people die from hepatitis B due to ignorance, health experts are worried that there could be more infections and many more are likely to die from the disease. Maxwell Souk reports from Tamale.
Mankrela Hassan, 32, was diagnosed hepatitis B positive 7 months ago.
It was my sister who is sick when we brought in at teaching hospital, and they needed blood to donate. Then when I went to the laboratory to donate blood, daddy told me that I have hepatitis.
Mankrel couldn't tell how he contracted the virus, but since then he has been struggling with it.
I saw many people sick about rate, but if I see them, I also feel pity for myself because I don't know what will happen to me. But I'm still praying to the God that God will do everything for me.
At a drinking spot where pito is sold near the Tamale Youth Home, pito is a local beverage made from guinea corn and has remained a traditional drink for many in Ghana since time immemorial. Here, deep misconceptions and stigma fuel the spread of the disease. The drink is served in a calabash at the spots. But the risk associated is the fact that a calabash can serve many mouths in a day, and an infected person can easily spread the disease.
Looking at the calabash, they wash it with soup, a nice soup. After they finish washing it, they rinse it with another water and then dry the calabash outside. After that, they bring it to serve. So we think there's no problem with those things. Yeah, hepatitis B cannot harm. Yeah.
People like Benjamin Tibetuob associate the disease to superstition. But Dr. Gerald Adiboka, a general specialist who works with the Tamale Teaching Hospital, explains why this is dangerous.
It depends on the viral load in the person. You know, most of those who drink, they end up, some of them may have bleeding gums. Some can bleed in their gums. So if you are having bleeding gums and you take a drink and there's blood tied to the calabash, then the other person also take you are likely to transfer the virus.
Hundreds of Ghanaians die annually from hepatitis B. Dr. Giral spells out preventive measures for the disease.
If you go to the hospital and they need to give you blood, the blood should be screened well. You should avoid maybe unprotected sex. You should avoid using the same blade, the same scissors and other things with infected person. You should also try to do the screening. If you are negative, then we'll vaccinate you.
The LFT is the liver function test, and the profile will tell us.
Screening and vaccination of the hepatitis B takes place at the Comfort Foundation, one of the clinics in Tamale. Regina Mahama walks in.
I'm concerned. That's why I've come to test. I don't know the cause, and I'm very scared. So that's why I've come to test.
Many hepatitis B patients have had to contend with stigma, but not for Mancriel.
My life first and now, I don't know what will happen later on. I'm worried for myself because I don't know how hepatitis.
Maxwell Sook in Northern Ghana. It's now time to talk about sports. Germany's women's bid for a 7th straight European title is over after Denmark came back to win 2-1 in their rearranged quarter-final match. The loss will put a lot of pressure on coach Steffi Jones, who took over from the all-conquering Sylvia Knight following the Rio triumph. To delve more into this particular game, we are now joined by Heiko Flores from DW's sports department.
Well, it's a big, big shock, especially not only in Germany and Europe, but I guess in the footballing world, women's footballing world. The Germans were the last champions the past 6 European Championships edition. That means more than 20 years. So they had a dominance that's been unparalleled anywhere else in the football world. So that started back in 1995 when they began just to win, and they just kept on winning, and that reign is over now.
Where did it exactly go wrong for Steffi Jones?
Well, Steffi Jones, to be fair to her, she just came into the team. She had really big, big shoes to fill. So in a way, she's inexperienced in that side. Also, she has a relatively young team, an average age of 26 years old, which in a way, yeah, it may not be exactly that we can say, okay, well, she didn't really have the means to win. Yeah,
compared to the team that Sylvia Knight had, you know, of more experienced players, you know.
Exactly. And Sylvia Knight, of course, as I said, Steffi Jones had really big shoes to fill, which in this case were Sylvia Knight's, who, as we mentioned before, she had a lot of European championships under her belt. Steffi Jones won those 3 European championships as a player, and now as a coach, she still needs some time, which I think the DFB will give to her. However, there is some pressure on her job.
Okay, and turning to football, Cristiano Ronaldo returned from a summer holiday and appeared in court to answer charges of tax evasion. Now, despite a stage being set for him, he declined to speak to the media after giving evidence. Do we know why?
Well, no, not exactly. Until now, we don't know much about it, rather than just the facts of what's been said, who's guilty, who's not. And of course, he's going to say he's not guilty. In this case, today he showed up. He didn't talk to any of the media. He went in with a car and left, and none of the media were able to even see him. So in a way, if he's hiding, I don't know if that tells you something.
Heiko Flores from the sports department.
And as we promised you earlier about your responses to our question, which is, should political parties allow presidential candidates contest an election after failing in the first bid? And so many responses as usual. Lucky Desmond from Equatorial Guinea says, I think we Africans don't need proof of how to govern us in this modern world of today.
Daniel from Ghana says, I see no reasons for a failed African politician to contest in a second term after failing citizens woefully.
Actually, we brought this question up because you see, across the political spectrum in Africa, you see politicians who've failed in their first bid, and they are always the opposition, always there for that political party without a replacement. And Ziel Anuru came from Nigeria, said, I think political parties should allow them, after failing in the first bid, to recontest with but with age restriction.
Mm-hmm. He puts, you know, a but there. And Alex Makabanga from Tanzania also thinks that it is better to try again their luck and opportunity.
Jonathan from Zambia said this subject is to a party constitution and what it stipulates. Zambia's late president Michael Sata stood for several times before he won the presidential elections.
And by the way, that's the same case with Abdoulaye Wade. He stood many times before he finally won it. Anyway, Eisenhower Temple from
and
Zambia
it's happening
says
in Kenya right now.
A definite no, although in our case we have one who has lost five times and still thinks he can pull off and Abraham Lincoln features. Thank you very much for your comments. My friend Abubakar Jallo
is
happy.
Keep the conversation going.
Yeah, he's happy that you've been able to write, you know. Anyway, for the rest of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo.
Bye for now.